Coming up on Tech News Today, will Microsoft kill Nokia's Android phone? Yeah, Nokia has an Android phone. How you can get Led Zeppelin on Spotify and Twitter competing with Snapchat? Maybe, maybe not. All that and more coming up.
Netcasts you love.
From people you trust.
This is Twit.
Bandwidth for Tech News Today is provided by CashFly at CACHEFLY.com.
This is Tech News Today for Wednesday, December 11th, 2013. Tech News Today is brought to you by IT Pro TV. Are you looking to upgrade your IT skills or prepare for certification? IT Pro TV offers engaging and informative tutorials streamed to your Roku, computer, or mobile device. For 50% off the lifetime of your account, go to itpro.tv/TNT and use the code TNT50. And by Shutterstock.com. With over 28 million high-quality stock photos, illustrations, vectors, and video clips, Shutterstock helps you take your creative projects to the next level. For 25% off your new account, go to Shutterstock.com and use offer code TNT1213. And by Personal Capital. With Personal Capital, you'll finally have all your financial life in one place and get a clear view of everything you own. Best of all, it's free! To sign up, go to personalcapital.com/TNT. Welcome to Tech News Today. I'm Tom Merritt.
I'm Sarah Lane.
I'm Maya Zakhtar.
And I'm Jason Howell.
And this is the show that keeps you up to date on the most important stories in the tech world, puts them in some context for you, starting with the top 10 stories of the day. We call them the News Feud. Microsoft announced Wednesday it has sold more than 2 million Xbox One video game consoles since it launched 18 days ago on November 22nd. That means the Xbox One is selling at a faster pace than the Xbox 360 did. Japan's Sony PS4 last week said it took 15 days for the PS4 sales to cross 2.1 million. The Xbox One has been on sale in 13 countries. The PS4 is now on sale in 32 countries.
Spotify now offers free access to its streaming music catalog on iOS and Android smartphones and tablets. A couple different models, though. Tablets will have access to the same freemium experience as desktop Spotify. iOS and Android users get a new shuffle service, which works like Pandora or iTunes Radio, but gives you more control over the playlist. There are some limitations. You can't perform unlimited search or listen queries, but you can get the lead out because Spotify has inked an exclusive deal with streaming music partnership holdout Led Zeppelin.
Awesome. Over on Twitter, EvLeaks published pictures of a Nokia device known as Normandy. The Verge's Tom Warren reports that Normandy would run a forked version of Android. Now, the device itself looks like a Lumia phone with a big black glass slab on the front with a bright red body. Will it be released since Microsoft will take control of Nokia's handset operations? I'd wager against that.
The Washington Post reports that the U.S. NSA and the U.K.'s GCHQ may be using Google's advertising cookie Pref to track targets. Cookie itself only contains a unique number that identifies a browser, but that identifier can be used to single out a specific machine in order to hack into the system and infect it with malware.
AT&T CEO Randall Stephenson warns that the era of big subsidies for devices is coming to an end. Speaking at an investor conference in New York City, Stephenson says, with smartphone penetration nearing at 90% in the U.S., wireless operators need to work harder to get customers to use more of the network. And, quote, that means more device upgrades. And the model has to change. You can't afford to subsidize devices like that.
The General Court of the European Union says that Microsoft's acquisition of Skype is A-OK. Cisco and Italian VoIP company MessageNet asked the court to overturn the European Commission's approval of the merger, claiming the deal was anti-competitive. Now, the Skype acquisition combined with Windows Live Messenger services gives Microsoft an 80 to 90% share of video communications on Windows PCs. However, the court said that video communications are a segment of an overall consumer communications market full of competition.
Twitter updated its Android and iOS apps Tuesday, making direct messaging more prominent and adding the ability to send and view photos in those messages. The update also allows swiping between multiple timelines like your homepage, the Discover page where the trends are, and your activity page.
John McAfee wants to create new devices resistant to government surveillance by creating localized secure networks. Speaking at the C2SV conference in Silicon Valley this weekend, McAfee says the D-Central will be the first product from his new company, Future Tense Central, and will combine existing technologies into a single package of hardware and software that creates a portable network that will extend, quote, about three blocks in the city or a quarter mile out in the country, according to McAfee. So,
and since my sweetie left me, Harlem, well, it ain't the same old place. Well, Cinda Williams, this may turn your Harlem blues around. New York City Mayor Michael Bloomberg announced Tuesday that Harlem will be getting a new outdoor public Wi-Fi network covering 95 city blocks from 110th Street to 138th Street. The network will be accessible for free through a donation from the Furman Family Foundation. The first phase is scheduled to be complete in May 2014.
Apple TV just got some more apps today. Watch ABC, Bloomberg, Korean channel Core TV, and Sony's Crackle will join what is becoming a very crowded Apple TV menu. Watch ABC is still tied to a cable subscription. Bloomberg is bringing live 24-hour streaming news 7 days a week, and Crackle has the most awesome of awesome things. Barry Gordy's The Last Dragon, my favorite rain delay movie about a teenage kung fu master from Harlem nicknamed Bruce Leroy. Seriously.
Hey. This episode of Tech News Today is brought to you by ITPro.TV. If you're a fan of Twit, you know a lot about technology. Chances are you're probably already acting as the IT guy for your friends, for your family. And have you ever thought about working in IT professionally? It can be difficult to know where to start, what to study, which certifications to get, all that stuff to validate your skills. Or if you're already an IT professional, you know that the world of IT is always changing. Vendors release new technologies. You need to get new certifications all the time. It can be hard to keep up. IT Pro TV is a video network dedicated exclusively to the world of information technology. Whether you're looking to jumpstart a career in IT or you're already in the field, IT Pro TV supplements traditional learning methods in a fun and engaging way, makes your learning as maximized as possible, and prepares you for certification exams. They've got over 100 hours of content, 20 hours being added each week, growing episode library. They have courses on CompTIA, Microsoft, Cisco, all kinds of certifications. There's also direct interaction with the hosts. They've got a live chat going on during the show, web-based Q&A specific to the topic being studied. If this approach sounds familiar, well, the guys behind IT Pro TV are big fans of Twit. They have over 10 years of experience in e-learning and were inspired by Leo's NAB talk to start IT Pro TV. They even use the same cameras, microphones, lighting, a TriCaster, all the same stuff. Check it out, itpro.tv/TNT, and use the code TNT50. It'll upgrade your brain with the most popular certifications recognized by employers. There's also a free preview on the site if you want to check out some of their videos or their live stream. Subscriptions are normally $57 per month or $570 for the entire year, but we have a special offer. Because they're huge fans of Twit, if you sign up between now and the end of the year using that code TNT50, you'll receive 50% off your subscription for the lifetime of your account. That's only $28.50 per month, or $285 for a year. That's itpro.tv/TNT. Use the code TNT50 to receive 50% off. We thank IT Pro TV for their support of Tech News Today. All right, joining us now to kick around the stories of the day, it's good to have Danny Sullivan, editor-in-chief of Search Engine Land, on the show. Welcome back, Danny.
Thanks. Good to be back.
Good to have you. Let's start off talking about this Nokia phone, this Android phone. Verge sources saying Nokia building an Android phone of their own. It's codenamed Normandy. All Things D says they also call it AOL for Asha on Linux. Of course, Android based on Linux. Verge sources say it's an Asha equivalent. That's the bargain phones that Nokia makes. And it has a modified Android, similar to what Amazon does with Kindle. The Asha series currently runs the Series 40 OS. That's an aging OS. So the idea is you take Android, you modify it, and you make it your bargain phone operating system. But of course, Microsoft is involved because Microsoft's acquiring Nokia's handset business. So modifications, including featuring Bing as the search engine, featuring Skype, have been included. And All Things D sources say that that makes this more palatable to Microsoft. One source at Nokia told The Verge, full steam ahead for release in 2014. David Meyer at GigaOM, though, points out Microsoft will own the Asha brand when they acquire Nokia. They're only licensing the Nokia brand. So if Microsoft wants to put out its own Asha phone, they might want to use a version of Windows Phone on it and not be out there pushing Android. So, Danny Sullivan, when Satya Nadella or whoever takes over Microsoft, do you think that they allow an Android phone to go out under their name?
I don't think so. I think Microsoft has three operating systems already running if you go Xbox, Windows, and Windows Phone. I don't think they need to be having to deal with the support of a fourth one in any way. And I don't think it looks... Oh, but you can't hear me. Can you hear me?
No, we can hear you. Yeah, you're good.
Yeah, all right, sorry. Yeah. I realized I turned off my... I had my mute off earlier. But and I don't think it looks good. I think it's a really weird mixed marketing message to be running around saying, hey, you know... It's all about Windows. We're all connected. You want to have a Windows device, and then you have this Android phone. Even for the possible benefit of getting into a low-end thing, it'd be better off coming up with a low-end Windows phone that you could just put out there. And the idea of running a forked Android, that would have its own nightmare, because then you have to create your own app store to run for it. You have to maintain all those different apps. And maybe you're not worrying about it. Maybe you're thinking, okay, we'll only offer a limited number because this is a low-cost phone, so people aren't going to want that much stuff that we've got to make sure works and runs and happens okay. But I just think it's full of a lot of nightmares. And it sounds like it's the remnant of a product that was sort of a backstop for Nokia if things didn't go well. And, you know, they're heading to Microsoft. So I think they're going to go all in.
If the Asha brand continues and Microsoft is going to continue producing those things for the markets that Asha is focused on, that's usually the lower income markets or it's the emerging markets, it wouldn't be too crazy to me if, assuming they're keeping this operating system around, let's assume that, if they're going to have an Asha brand, that it being based on Android would work only if all the applications that worked before would continue to work on the Android version of it, as long as it's kind of a seamless experience. I think Microsoft would have a huge problem if they were going to run a Windows Phone version of that was limited on this potentially lower-end phone, because if it's an Asha brand, usually lower-end. And if you want to have a Windows Phone experience or a Windows experience that's going to be good, you don't want to find out that there's a really lousy version of that running on this Nokia. I think Microsoft just kills the Asha line. Well, they won't be coming out with anything with Asha or this lower-end market other than their Windows phones, which are pretty low cost, but I don't think they're going to run a – I don't see them putting Windows Phone on a low-end product like the Asha.
Do we see them spawning another Yola where a few people after the acquisition take off and we see another low-end Android-based operating system come out?
No, that silence is just no.
That's Mike's, a big no.
Yeah, the folks that wanted to go have gone, and they've built that other phone out there, the Yola phone. I think that's based on Sailfish, right? And that was the remnants of Mego, and that was supposed to be Nokia's big, big bet, and then they went right with Microsoft Windows Phone. So I don't know if anybody at Nokia wants to jump ship, especially with now the incoming leadership of Microsoft and what they could possibly do with them.
Another
kind
thing,
of a
by
funny,
the way.
Even though it's a code name, AOL, that's unfortunate.
You'll get the operating system as a series of floppy disks free in the mail, possibly.
You get free 20 hours.
Another thing, by the way, is that, you know, it was about April of this year where FairSearch, which is sort of this company or organization that Microsoft backs a lot, that goes after Google and anti-competition things, complained to the EU that Android wasn't open. And they're like, you know, if you want to run Android, you have to have all this Google stuff to go with it. You can't do what you want. And Google pushes all these things your way. And, you know, that's not exactly true. It depends on what you want to call Android. If you're talking Android where, you know, Google is putting its dev approval on it and it's going to license it out and everything, sure. But if you're talking Android, the open source project, and you want to just take the code and do what you want, not necessarily. And so it might be odd to have Microsoft on the one hand saying Android is this closed system that's all Google-like and you can't do anything with it, and then have Google be able to say, well, gee, that's funny, because you guys have an Android phone where you've changed it all around to use all your own stuff, so explain to us again how Android's all closed and you can't do what you want with it. So
yeah, that's a good point. Let's get some free music. Let's rock out. Spotify had their big announcement, Sarah.
Yeah, that's right. So tablets now have access to basically the same freemium experience as anybody who uses Spotify on the desktop. And then the Shuffle service is entirely new. It's for both Android and iOS apps. And it acts like more like Pandora or iTunes Radio or any other station-based streaming service. Although Spotify is touting its product as kind of like, you know, if you had a Lady Gaga station and you play that station on one of the others, you get Lady Gaga and then a bunch of other stuff. And Spotify wants it to be mostly the artist that you like with some other stuff. So it's a little bit more of like, it's like a Pandora that you have more control over. There's also some playlists that are delivered based on the time of year and what's popular. So there are certainly some other stations that are given to you. But really the big news is that the freemium service, which is ad-supported, I mean, it's not actually free, is now available on mobile, where previously it was just on the desktop. You really didn't have a lot of, you didn't have the same experience if you wanted to take your music with you. And I've always said that that's really why streaming services are so great. If you can't access all of your music on the go, it's really hard to convince somebody that they want to pay for it. Daniel Ek, CEO of Spotify, has some good numbers to throw out. 1.5 billion playlists have been created. 4.5 billion hours of music was streamed last year. Everything's very nice. Both of the Android and iOS tablets will be designed to play with the new Connect offering. Those are speakers that are designed specifically to be able to send your Spotify music streamed to those speakers, kind of like a Sonos solution in the home. You know, it's worth mentioning Ardio, which is Spotify's competitor that has much less of a foothold in Europe, but does well in certain markets, now has added 20 countries to its roster. Argentina, Venezuela, South Africa, Israel, just names a few, which actually puts Ardio in more countries than Spotify, even though Spotify is a bigger business. Although Deezer is available in 182 countries, so it actually still holds that crown. And then I mentioned in the news views, Led Zeppelin, exclusive partnership with Spotify. About a year ago, Metallica did the same thing, which was kind of a funny thing, considering that Spotify's Sean Parker was one of the co-founders of Napster, and Metallica had a famous quarrel with Napster for a while. Danny, do you think, you know, it seems like Spotify and Ardio and other competing services are kind of just keeping up with each other at this point, but are they kind of backed into a place where they have to offer free stuff to people for mobile to convince them that they actually want to pay?
I think that I remember when Spotify first came out, it was certainly confusing to me, these different options of, wait, I'm going to get it free here, but I got to pay for it here, and then if I want to download it there. So I think the more that they can go to a model where everybody can have it free, the easier it'll be for them to get that kind of adoption. And then, you know, I think that as we have these different services coming in, and then you add into it things like, say, Apple, I can't remember now, is it iRadio that they call it? You know, offering similar types of things, or Google with its Google Play Unlimited or whatever its name's going on there. There's so many of them that are out there now that, yeah, I think we may be looking at a race to just get as much of, it's not eyeballs, but earballs, I suppose. Earballs probably not the right
eardrums might be as the way to go.
Tympanic membranes or something.
There's something that's like to describe that organ that listens. Ears.
Earlobes.
Yes, to get them
in ear. You need enough, a bunch of earlobes on your app. No, I think you're right, because when people move to mobile, if they're a Spotify curious person, right? If somebody's paying for it, that's a whole different matter. But I'm like, I kind of use Spotify. And then they go to mobile and they're like, well, I'm out. There's no Spotify available for me. It doesn't work. So I'm going to use something else. I'm going to go to Amazon or Google or just my iTunes list or Google playlist or whatever. So instead of letting them be out on that phone, they're trying to bring people in through that outdoor and have some connection to your phone with a little bit of a freemium model there. I don't know if it's enough to really convince people. There's already a few people in the chat room saying, I don't want somebody making playlists for me. That's not how I want to create my music experience.
Yeah, I was looking at the story, and the fact that the tablet version is much more like the desktop version, where you have the ad-supported stuff and you can do everything you normally do, kind of shows an interesting way that Spotify's looking at tablets. Because if these, to me, I've always been a little bit stymied by the idea of, I don't have a hinge, so I have to pay extra for this kind of concept when it comes to apps. So a tablet experience that's very similar to a desktop one, I think that's really smart. The smartphone app being something you got to shuffle through, I think is a great kind of gateway drug kind of thing, because Spotify already had a free component with the radio service, which wasn't exactly the same kind of service you had on the desktop, but at least it gave you some exposure by increasing the amount of music you can actually listen to, of stuff that you've controlled with your own playlists. That, I think, will get more paying subscribers on mobile devices, because tablet space, while it's growing, it's not the same as the mobile phone market.
And Twitter has decided they want to take on the messaging space. I don't know exactly how much that means, Iaz. Let's hear what they're doing first.
All right, so what Twitter has done is they've updated their iOS and Android apps today, and messaging is now at the forefront. So instead of the DM button being buried under the Me tab, now it's actually right next to the notifications. If you're on iOS, it's on the bottom. If you're using Android, it's on the top. Twitter also introduced the ability to DM photos to others, and you can see those photos on Twitter's website as well, so you have that option. Twitter also added some new functionality. So when you have the app open, you can swipe left to right. You can actually go from your home timeline to the Discover timeline, although the Discover menu option isn't really there as much on the iOS version. Danny, it looks like Twitter's pushing for people to use this messaging feature, but is this just like another checkbox for Twitter, or is this going to actually get people to remember, oh yeah, Twitter has a messaging function?
It may cause more people to do it. It was interesting because a lot of the tech people seem to freak out and they're like, aha, it's yet another messaging app. And it's all about messaging apps now these days, and everybody wants them. And I think especially following on people looking at Snapchat and the activity that's going on there. But I don't know. I mean, I don't know that if you've been using another messaging app, this necessarily causes you to use it more. I think there are people who have already been using Twitter messages in some ways, and I think they already know about it. But maybe it'll expose it to more people. I don't know that it's going to suddenly grab Twitter a huge amount more share, but you know, it sets them up a little bit easier, I guess, against what might happen. Maybe if they can make the messages disappear within 7 seconds, then they've got a product. But
I don't really see Twitter wanting to compete with messaging apps. I think Twitter wants to give you less of a reason to jump off of its mobile experience into something else to continue a conversation with a friend and then maybe not go back to Twitter and see a promoted tweet. I think, you know, the DMs are really limited. They're not a great way to have a back and forth conversation, but they exist. And if Twitter makes that product just a little bit better and adds some functionality and has probably some data that says it would be really nice if you were able to share something like an image in a DM and have somebody be able to quickly save that out and then tweet it type of a thing, That's probably, I would say, what's going on here.
I definitely have friends who message me in Twitter, and it kind of takes me by surprise sometimes because I don't really keep up on it, right? I may look at it once a day, but it's not something I'm constantly checking. So putting it front and center in the mobile app might make me do that a little more. And also when I have friends from overseas come in, if they don't have a text messaging plan, a lot of times that's how we'll communicate the way we would normally on text messaging. So that makes that more convenient. And I agree with you, Sarah. I think this is just Twitter saying, well, we don't want to lose people to these other apps. So let's make what we have work a little better. I'll be honest, though, I have never found myself saying, gosh, I wish I could send a photo in this DM. Maybe I'll be glad that it's there at some point. I don't know.
I think the text messaging stuff is really intriguing to me because when you look at the surveys of what is the most used app and most used feature on phones, it is like text messaging. We forget about it, right? But people are using SMS like more than anything else that they do on their phones, or rivaling anything else, including a Facebook or including a Twitter or whatever else that's out there. And for all this attention that's going on, I mean, Facebook rolled out their Facebook, I can't even remember the name now, Facebook Home, and we're going to make with the chat heads and it's going to be easier. And, you know, Google's renaming their Hangouts or whatever. And yet SMS is still kicking along strong. And you pay for it as well. And you would think that somebody would come in there and say, look, this is cheap, easy SMS that doesn't cost you a dime. Don't you want that? And which, by the way, is what Google Voice does really well. You don't have to, you can send your SMSs and you don't have to go through a provider as well. But that just never seemed to kind of take off. So, you know, there's potentially a big market out there for someone to replace the text messaging. But, you know, maybe those kids today with their all, they can eat text messaging plans. They don't need it. Maybe SMS survives because of that, and we've swallowed the cost. But, you know, for me, every time they want to charge me for an SMS, it just drives me insane.
Yeah, I mean, assuming people are using the official Twitter app as well. That's the other thing. There are still other ways to get Twitter information. So if you're using the app, I think anything that keeps the user there and engaged. So let's say I was looking at Twitter and I saw somebody's post. I'm like, oh, I just want to DM them directly. As opposed to going, where is that function? It seems like that's something that should have been there. When Twitter, I think it actually was a function of a much older version of Twitter and they took it out, which actually made me very irritated because I used to use DMs quite a bit. And then I started using them a lot less because I'm like, are people going to even notice this is here? Because unless they have it tied to their emails, they're not going to check it very often. So I think it's a checkbox feature flat out. They have to have this, just like Facebook has Messenger, just like there's lots of other services. A lot of people online that are saying, it's like a Snapchat competitor. I don't see how it is, other than the fact you can have images. But that's not anything like Snapchat, because that whole thing is about temporary and these things disappearing. But I think they just needed to bolster that product. It's another thing to have.
More of an ICQ competitor, really, when you think about it. Why did they get rid of direct message? I wonder if they had an about face at some point where they were going to get rid of direct messaging and then said, wait a minute, that would be the wrong thing to do. That would put us too far away from the Snapchats and WhatsApps and KakaoTalks and Lines and the list goes on and on.
Another thing that's happened is that they have stepped up the things like the Magic Rec, which is the thing that tells you that, hey, a bunch of your friends have followed this account, you should follow that, or the Magic, I think Magic Pick is one of them as well. And they've stepped up this ability to send you things from Twitter directly. And it makes sense that if you're going to do more of that, or maybe you down the line you want to introduce the way for an advertiser to send you messages, or you just want Twitter to communicate more with you directly, it makes sense to not leave this as this sort of forgotten thing. And it was. You'd always be like, where did you put the direct messages now? I can't find it. So,
all right, real quickly, I want to tell you about one of our sponsors today, Shutterstock.com. You'll find the perfect image or video for whatever creative project you're working on. You've got a website. Have you got some kind of newsletter? Maybe it's a local community newsletter. Maybe you're just making a video. I don't know. You got 28 million high-quality stock photos, illustrations, vectors, and video clips at Shutterstock. Whatever you're working on, you're going to be able to find something there that's going to make it look better. And you're not going to have to risk worrying about, do I have the rights to use this? Yeah, you got the rights. You paid for it. You didn't pay like crazy amounts of money for it. Shutterstock sources images from around the world, puts them at your fingertips. The contributors are often professional photographers and artists. And Shutterstock reviews each image individually to make sure it's quality before they add it to their library. But it doesn't slow them down. They're adding 20,000 images a day. So every time you visit, you're going to find something new. And they give you the images you need to bring that project up to the next level. Sophisticated search tools, shareable light boxes where you can store images you're considering and show them to other people on Shutterstock that you're collaborating with. They have an award-winning iPad app, and they have multilingual customer service. You can even choose individual image packs or monthly subscription, whatever works best for you. And you can download any image in any size and pay only one price. You can try Shutterstock today by signing up for a free account. No credit card needed. Just start an account, begin using Shutterstock to help imagine what your next project could be like, and save your favorite images to a lightbox to review later. Once you decide to purchase, use offer code TNT1213, and new accounts will receive 25% off any package. That's Shutterstock.com for 25% off new accounts. Use that offer code TNT1213. We thank Shutterstock for their support of Tech News Today. AT&T CEO, we heard in the news, Fuse says subsidies way of the past. Randall Stephenson was speaking at an investor conference. He said, as you approach 90% penetration, you move into maintenance mode. That means more device upgrades, and the model has to change. You can't afford to subsidize devices like that. So he's saying, like, we were subsidizing devices because we were focusing on the top end of the market. We needed to bring people onto the network and get them to use it. Well, they're doing that. They're using it. They're using the crap out of it. So now we need to figure out another way to charge them. Last week, AT&T introduced a plan that saves you $15 a month if you use an older phone or if you bring your own phone. It's called the Mobile Share Value Plan. Stephenson indicated that in the future, financing, not subsidizing, is what AT&T wants to be in the business of. That's where the money is going to be made. AT&T Next is the plan that offers customers the ability to get a new device for no money down every 12 or 18 months. So you're basically doing a finance plan. T-Mobile kicked this off. They were the first ones to come out with this, and everybody's kind of followed suit. So now that capacity is better, you don't have to focus on the high end. they did note that mobile video is going to be a big area of growth for them, and that's going to use a lot of that extra capacity. The connected home, the connected car. Does this sound like it's a good thing for consumers, Danny?
It would be a good thing for consumers if the smartphone prices actually come back down. You know, if it's going to be $15 off of what we already inflated them up to begin with, I'm not exactly thrilled over the idea. And I'm certainly not believing them crying any tears that, wow, we've been losing a lot of money subsidizing these phones, which suggests that they were actually losing money with a subsidy. That's not what was happening. What was happening was they were covering some of the cost of the phone, and they were charging you a huge amount of money per month for the plan that you were already getting. When I upgraded my Verizon phone, my plan's $70 a month. That's me paying for 200 text messages because it's old. I have unlimited data, which I never used, but I kind of kept it going or whatever, and 450 minutes. But it's $70 a month, and I actually paid for the full iPhone 5S as the upgrade so as not to lose that plan, because not just for the unlimited data, but the only comparable plan that they had left was like a $95 a month plan. It was like, what happened? It's the same plan. It's the same stuff that you had out there. I mean, I know people are using more data than they have in the past, but you also cracked down on the amount of data that's being used. So, sure, if we can move it to where people are able to buy their devices and, understand that there's a device cost separate from the phone cost, the service cost, I just wonder if that's going to then maybe make some of these people think, you know what, the phone cost is a lot. And I got to tell you, on T-Mobile, they have a fantastic smartphone plan that's like $30 a month. That's $30 a month for 100 minutes, and it's like 5 gigabytes of data, and that's, high-speed data. It's still T-Mobile, but it's five with it there, and it's unlimited texting. It's like, well, if they can do that for $30 a month, why can't you do that, AT&T and everybody else? And if you know where to find it, by the way, on T-Mobile, you got to know where to find it.
Yeah, it's a little bit of a challenge.
You got to do a Google search for it, because T-Mobile doesn't make it really well known. I'd find it, because I know Jason and I have been going through that as well.
I wrote a column on it, so you can find it that way, too.
I don't know.
If you search for best smartphone plan, hopefully it comes up.
I don't know if this is going to be good for consumers as much as it's going to be good for these carriers, because they don't have to carry these giant charges. I mean, Sprint was losing money like crazy because they gave Apple so much money for those iPhones, because they're like, we need to have this device to be considered a real carrier. They paid this money to Apple outright, and Apple got to enjoy that profit. So I think consumers are just going to see a different style of billing. I know when we saw the T-Mobile shift, it looked a little confusing, but at the end of the day, they're seeing one bill. It was like, here's $80 a month or whatever it's going to be. It's just broken up a little differently. It might be good for accountants to figure out how to do the math, but I don't know about consumers when it comes to this.
I agree. I mean, obviously, they're going to do what's best for carriers. They're trying to make it sound a little bit, I feel these subsidies have been a bad thing because they make people have to have early termination fees and all of this. Let's just make it easy for people and be in the financing business. You pay for what you get. And that's appealing to me. I love that idea. But it does make you pay more, right? Because I think they're just looking for a way to get more out of your bill every month. Why wouldn't they? That's what they do. So at least we do have some competition, as Danny's pointing out. There is a great plan on T-Mobile that you can get. I've got the link to your article, Danny. We'll put it in the show notes for people so that should be easy for them to find, at least at twit.tv/TNT. But that's the thing. You've got to shop around. And getting rid of the contract lengths was not something that Randall Stephenson ever mentioned. So, I don't know if AT&T is going to try to say, hey, we'll finance your phone, but we'll also still charge you an early termination fee if you terminate the contract. That's where I would like to be. Contractless, so I'm free to switch my phone between the different networks. That requires a technical issue, too. The phones don't always work on every network. Let's talk about AT&T some more, but let's talk about wired AT&T. I want to get gigabit service in Austin, Texas. Ayaz, what do I need to do to get the best price?
And you're a lucky guy, because in four neighborhoods in Austin, the AT&T is bringing gigapower fiber. If you want the best price, it's $70 a month right now for 300 megabits down. It's going to be a gigabit per second in mid-2014. But if you want the $70 plan, you have to agree that AT&T can, you're going to have to participate in AT&T internet preferences. And what that means is that AT&T may use your web browsing information, like the search terms you enter and the web pages you visit, to provide you relevant offers and ads tailored to your interests, Tom. The plan also requires a one-year commitment and up to a $348 early termination fee if you disconnect before the term ends. Or if you don't want AT&T watching what you're doing all the time, you can...
Too bad. The NSA makes them. Oh, I'm sorry. Go ahead.
if you don't want to actively participate in AT&T spying on you, it's going to cost you $100 a month. Customers get upgraded to the gigabit per second at a no extra cost. TV service is another $50. And the gigabit service is going to have a 1 terabyte data cap with overage fees of $10 per additional 50 gigabytes, up to an additional $30 per month. No contract on that. I was actually talking to Brian Brushwood this morning about it because he opted for the $100 plan because he didn't feel like getting spied on or having a contract. And the question was, how are you getting tracked? Now, Stacey Higginbotham over at GigaOM asked AT&T, how are you tracking people or looking at your data? She asked if AT&T was using deep packet inspection, and here's AT&T's response. We use various methods to collect web browsing information, and we are currently reviewing the methods we may use for the Internet Preferences Program. Whichever method is used, we will not collect information from secure HTTPS or otherwise encrypted sites, such as online banking or when a credit card is used to buy something online on a secure site, and we won't sell your personal information to anyone for any reason. Danny, cheaper high-speed internet, but you got to do it if your ISP spies on you. Would you go for something like this?
You know, sorry, I'm putting my coat on. We still have cold down here in Southern California, which I know is not as bad as cold everywhere else.
That was symbolic. I'm leaving.
It's still cold. Yeah, I'm out of here. you know, it'd be a toss-up. I might pay the extra just because I don't like the idea of it, and yet I'd probably feel like if I paid the extra, they're still spying on me anyway, which leads me back to, well, why don't you just go ahead and do it? It might cause me to want to step up using HTTPS even more wherever I could. But, you know, and a lot of services have that already enabled. If you're going to Google, you're going to Facebook, you're doing that sort of stuff, it's already enabled. But I kind of feel like this is the point where you kind of want the government to step in and say, you know what? No, that's not happening. you know, maybe that's the way we're going.
Unusual, huh? Yeah.
What's that?
I said that would be awfully unusual for the government.
No, you shouldn't spy on people. That's the irony. That's the irony that happened this week too, right? We had the tech companies all get together to say to the government, hey, you guys are spying on stuff too much, and don't you understand that's our business? You can't be doing it.
Well, and very significantly, no telecoms were signed on to that letter. You did not see AT&T signing that letter here.
Yeah.
So I'm kind of with you. I mean, at first you look at this and you're like, wait, no way. I don't want them looking at my stuff. But in this world, where if you're like us and you think, well, there's people out there looking at your stuff no matter what you do, so I need to take my own protection into my own hands. Some people in chatter say, just run Tor or just run a VPN or, you know, do NotScript or secure search or, you know, there's all kinds of methods you can use to protect yourself anyway and probably should be doing. Then why not take the discount, $70 a month? They're not going to learn that much from you.
Yeah, there's that and the idea that there's a contract involved. If you go to VPN or Tor, you're going to slow down your speeds, right? And that's a technical issue because you want super fast internet. But then again, if you're getting 300 megabits per second or a gigabit, a slower version of that might not be so horrible, but assuming a VPN can even handle those kinds of speeds. So to me, I don't think I would trade it in. I just want more and more companies putting out fiber, even if they're going to have these onerous terms. Just whatever it takes, just get more fiber in more areas because it was Google's influence that caused a lot of these companies to go, we have to do something. Google's going to take over. If AT&T is going to do it with this play, you've really got to read the terms of service when it comes to this. And actually, I know that's an unpopular idea, but you got to know what you're getting into. The internet.
But the thing is AT&T doesn't seem to know what it wants you to get into yet. I mean, their response to GigaOM was pretty vague. Mm-hmm. They're currently reviewing the methods that they may use for the Internet Preferences Program. Let's spell it out really clear. And then we can all decide if $70 a month is attractive enough so that AT&T now knows that I search for... Well, it doesn't matter. It's none of your guys' business what I'm searching for. I don't know that my expectation of privacy is pretty low. It's bottomed out. So on the surface, this doesn't freak me out too much. But yeah, I mean, if they're never going to be able to see anything that's on secure, HTTP or otherwise encrypted. I mean, it's already like, well, they're not going to see a lot of what I'm doing already, but I want them to be able to explain to me exactly how they're collecting this information.
And don't forget, Austin actually has competition in gigabit internet here because AT&T is only doing this because Google's moving into the market, one would expect anyway. So you will have a choice of your gigabit internet in Austin, at least ostensibly, once all of this stuff rolls out. Let's finish up our discussion section with a little bit of mobile payment news, Sarah.
Yes, so Square has acquired a company called Evenly. And man, I really feel like I'm on the mobile payments beat, but I had never used Evenly. And it's probably good that I didn't fall in love with it because the company, now that it's owned by Square, will shut down early 2014. They don't have a specific day, but they say they'll give users advance notice if for any reason they've got outstanding balances in their account. What's interesting about Evenly is it's not so much a Venmo competitor, Venmo being owned by PayPal now, but it's designed to help users split transactions. This is something that Uber, the transportation app, has introduced. If you got five people in an SUV, it's nice to say, okay, we're all going to pay a few dollars rather than have one person absorb that, you know, $20 ride or whatever. And I feel like this works really well in certain situations at a restaurant. You know, I went to a fancy birthday dinner last night and, you know, we're going to split the bill. So you can plop down six credit cards or you can use something like Evenly. But it's interesting. Square's has had a pretty big week. 2 days ago, they introduced their brand new Square Reader. That's the physical card reader that you attach to your iPhone or iPad or a tablet, which is thinner than the previous version. Square says it is now the thinnest mobile card reader on the market. But that's how Square started. It was the, hey, any vendor can easily take payments from a customer. Now it's I can email $5 to Tom using Square via email, which is something that's unique to Square. Now it's, and again, the Evenly technology isn't baked into anything in Square yet, but I have to assume, okay, well, now Square wants to be the place that you go to if you want to split the bill at dinner or owe somebody some money and you don't want to do it via email. It's all very interesting. I have to say, I find Venmo, which is certainly a competitor, to be a pretty perfect product that I'm using pretty often. So, Danny, what do you think? More choice? Is that good?
You know, what you were saying, you thought you're pretty on top of the mobile base model. I'm like, it's all magic. But in general, yes, I think the more that it advances the space and it allows people to do that and the transactions between each other would be great. You know, I thought the Square thing where you were supposed to email people money sounded pretty cool. Although I tried and I sent my wife $5 and I think I got this thing. Let me send it to you. And then she's like, I don't know if I ever got that. So my $5 is out there somewhere. But yeah, I think the more that it can make that kind of acceptance would be great. We just got our Christmas tree on Sunday and we were there and like there it's like the one place left that doesn't seem to take credit cards anymore. Like, well, we'll go over here and we'll ask this business if they can do it. I'm like, why don't you have the little reader or whatever? They're so small to begin with. So if they become smaller and they become easier and more people have that, and if we have, you know, even more alternatives, I'm game for it. Bring it on.
I want to see all this stuff in action. I want to have lots of competition. So I'm glad that Square is doing this. And I want to see more of these companies do this so we can try them out and we can work out the kinks in this. Because I've always been a fan of what used to be called card case. I think it's just, you know, Square payments system now where you walk up and it senses that you're there through the network, but it really is not that it doesn't have, you know, some kinds of security concerns, but it's fairly well done. And that's what I want. I don't want to have to do anything. I don't want to pull anything out of my pocket. I don't want to have to do math. I don't want to do any of that stuff. So more power to you.
What's really shocking, I think, is that we're still having to get some physical thing that we plug into our phone that we use with our physical card. I mean, why are we not tapping our phones together, right? That was what Google Wallet was supposed to be and went nowhere. And it's just crazy. We're still carrying around these. I bought a case for my, you know, I bought it was from OtterBox, and it's a case for my iPhone that, you know, slides out so I can carry my freaking driver's license and an extra credit card and a little bit of cash, which is great, but I shouldn't have to. I already have my phone. That ought to be able to do everything I need. That should be it. Make that happen for me, please.
Yes, I'm with Danny. Make that happen. All right. Well, you make that happen, we'll give you a randomizer. This was the day. It seems like every year on the same day, everybody puts out all of their end of the year lists. Today we had the top 10 most talked about people and topics on Facebook, YouTube revealing its top 10 videos for 2013, the list of best tech companies to work for. By the way, Twitter ended Facebook's 3-year streak. But the one that got our most votes in our straw poll at 45%, watched the 2013 most popular movies in 7 minutes. This is Filmography 2013. Genevieve Ip has done one of these, I think, for the past 4 years, where it's sort of a trailer for all of the movies that happened. And she edits them brilliantly by theme. Even if you haven't seen all these movies, it's just really fun to watch and see this retrospective that tells its own sort of meta story as you're watching it.
There must be some study that was done that December 11th is the most boring day in tech. So that all the companies have to, you know, put out their retrospectives a few weeks before Christmas.
No doubt, because all the stuff. I mean, Filmography is probably the least listicle-like of all the stuff we're talking about, but it's still a year in review, and here it is, December 11th. Congratulations. Now you have your lists. I'm sure there's more lists to come, though, especially if you're a BuzzFeed listener.
You can save so much time. 7 minutes, all the movies for the year, you're done.
This is perfect for me. I don't see any new movies these days. I'll just watch this.
You'll see them all right now.
All right, let's take a quick break. Thank our other sponsor for today's show, Personal Capital. This episode of Tech News Today brought to you by Personal Capital. Let me tell you, since I've been using Personal Capital, I get this regular report telling me, like, you spent too much money this week. Oh, yeah, you know, you're not doing too bad. You got a little money in. It's a great way to manage your finances. The catch-22 of financial life is the more progress you make, the more difficult it becomes. Accounts are scattered everywhere. You got a checking account. You got a savings account. You got a retirement account. Maybe if you leave a job, you got 2 retirement accounts or 3. And maybe you got an IRA. You've got your credit cards. Maybe you got a mortgage. Maybe you've got even a home equity loan on the mortgage. How are you going to make great investment decisions, or any investment decisions, when you're only seeing one piece of the puzzle at a time? You may make mistakes just based on incomplete intel. Personal Capital changes the game, combining all your financial accounts, giving you a total real-time snapshot of all your finances. So you'll get graphs, you'll get charts, you'll get reports, tell you the whole story, kind of like a financial GPS. And right now, you can use Personal Capital for free by going to Personal Capital, that's with an A, C-A-P-I-T-A-L, personalcapital.com/TNT. Signing up just takes a minute, and it'll pay big dividends. Well, it'll, in the metaphorical sense, by helping you make better investment decisions immediately, which actually could lead to the literal sense, possibly. Your financial life will be even more complicated tomorrow, so don't wait. Sign up now, absolutely free, at personalcapital.com/TNT. Get your free Personal Capital account. Smart investing means seeing the big picture. Start today. Visit personalcapital.com/TNT. And we thank Personal Capital for their support of Tech News Today. Let us see. Is there anything on the calendar, Sarah?
Let's look into the future and find out when Elder Scrolls Online is coming. It's coming April 4th to the PC. And if you can wait until June, you can get it on the Xbox One and the PS4 as well.
Excellent. And I believe we have an email as well.
Incoming message.
That's right. You knew this was inevitable. Rich from lovely Cleveland wrote in. He says, Tom and Posse, I would like to invite Justin Robert Young on a tour of lovely Cleveland next time he's in the area. You will see the city is replete with grassy knolls and even a home to a few castles. He sent us an image of one of the castles or a Wikipedia entry of that. Of course, it's also home to shuttered industry, disappointing sports teams, and excellent craft beer. It helps compensate for the other two, he says. I see my epithet is still needed to remind your listeners. P.S. I really only sent this email since Tom called me out on it.
Thanks, Rich. I didn't mean to call you out on it, but it's awesome that you wrote in. And don't forget Len Peralta, voted Cleveland's best podcaster.
Got another email from Jonathan Derry, who says, I enjoyed your discussion about the hour of code on yesterday's show. We made good points, but I think there's a bigger problem, and that's that this hour of code promotion is even something that we need. I may be biased here because I'm a computer programmer. However, there's a serious lack of understanding of computers in our society today, and I think it's getting dangerous. Just look at the court case with Newegg, where the jury found Newegg to be infringing. I would guess that if the jury had a basic understanding of software, they would have never come to that verdict. Bigger problem is that computer science should be taught along with the rest of sciences in elementary and high school. He says the goal here is not to make everybody a coder. It's to be able to get everyone to be able to speak the language, understand basic concepts, the same reason we teach biology, chemistry, physics. Not that we expect everybody to become a biologist. We want people to be able to talk intelligently about that subject.
Wow, Jonathan,
pretty good points there.
Yeah, that's a really, really good point. It's maybe we, you know, maybe right now we need this sort of thing to raise awareness, but you're right. Coding, computer science in general, involving coding and how computers work is probably now as necessary as biology and algebra and, you know, these other sciences so that people can just understand the world around them and know what these machines are doing and how they work. That's I love that. Thank you for the email, Jonathan. Well, that is it for this episode of Tech News Today. Danny Sullivan, a pleasure as always. What's happening over at Search Engine Land these days?
Oh, gosh. Tons of stuff. We just did a survey today. We're starting a thing we did with SurveyMonkey where we're looking at how people are shopping online and things that influence them and, you know, discovering that they want to go with the known retailers more than they want to go with things like free shopping. We got a whole bunch of series of things that will be coming out from there. When we're not busy wrapping up all the end of the year lists. That's how we're going to end our year, with a list every day. And then we'll make a list of all, with a list of lists, exactly.
It's the thing to do, man. Why? Just embrace it. Exactly.
Yep.
Check it out. Thank you, Danny. SearchEngineLand.com, of course, to follow what Danny's up to and his columns on CNET as well. Open mic submissions. Send an email to tnt@twit.tv. Subject, open mic. It's too late. But if you're hearing this message now, unless you're watching live, then you can hurry and get it in. No, the deadline for submission is today, Wednesday, December 11th. And we're going to record the show on Friday, December 13th. That's 2 days from now at 2 p.m. Pacific time for about an hour. So last chance to get those emails in. And don't forget, you can have a voice in what stories we cover by going to our subreddit and submitting a story there at technewstoday.reddit.com. I thanked the moderators yesterday, and I forgot to thank Jacob Miller and Rolmos, who also do a great job in there. Thank you guys for keeping that thing so useful and so well run. It's amazing. Email us, tnt@twit.tv. Give us a call, 260-TNT-SHOW. And, of course, find our show notes and everything else at our website, twit.tv/TNT. Marshall Kilpatrick joins us tomorrow. We'll see you then.
Upstaged by a kitty cat.
Best day of his life.